archived presentation for those people that aren't able to make it in here. So that will happen shortly. And over to you, Michelle.
Great. Thank you so much, Debbie, and thank you for the opportunity. Debbie and I actually met a few years ago in Canada, and it was just by chance that we were introduced to one another again. So thank you so much for the opportunity, and thanks so much for your evenings. I know it might be a little late at 8 p.m. For all of you, but I was trying to make it as late as possible as to not have to get up too early. It's now 5 a.m. here, and we live in a bungalow, and the family's sleeping on the same level as I'm on. So in the kitchen, I've got the kitchen fan on, and in the bathroom, I've got the bathroom fan going, trying to block noise between here and there in hopes not to wake them up. So I'm just letting you know what it's like here. And you're also lucky that I'm still sitting here in my pajama top. So I don't usually give lectures in my pajama top. My name is Michelle Eady. I'm coming to you from Canada, from a little place called Sioux Lookout, and I'm going to show you that on the map in a moment. And my purpose today is to chat with you about the kinds of things that we've been doing in Canada, particularly in northwestern Ontario, which is a province in Canada, and talk to you a little bit about the work that we've been doing here, the way that we've been working with our Indigenous population, our Aboriginal people, and then kind of into the future, what I'm planning on doing or why I'm coming to Australia and what my plans are while I'm there. So I tend to be a talker. My husband thinks this system's wonderful because it has a mute button, unlike in real life. So if you ever have a question or you want to interrupt me at any time, please just, you know, type that you have a question or put any comments that you have up in that comment box, and that will be wonderful. You all sound like you have such interesting jobs, and the work that you do, it sounds so great, and I'd just love to hear about what all of you are doing. So before I start, I just want to acknowledge all of the First Nations learners and practitioners who have opened their hearts and minds to the idea of e-channel literacy learning. That's what we call it here. That's the name that the government has given the program that we're working on, e-channel, which basically is electronic means of reaching First Nation or reaching literacy learners. And the area where I work is the Aboriginal literacy learner. Here we don't use the term Aboriginal as much as you do, nor Indigenous. The term that's more likely used is First Nations. So our Aboriginal people are called First Nations learners. It's surprising when I came to Australia in January and in June and speaking to people, lots of people were surprised that we have Aboriginal people in Canada. And actually, our Aboriginal people are very similar to yours, very similar histories, backgrounds, traditions, cultures are very similar, I'm finding, which I find to be very interesting. And so that's the term that we use. So I'll use that interchangeably with Indigenous and Aboriginal. I'd like to acknowledge the Aboriginal community members, the traditional custodians and owners of the land, which we meet on today, both in your country and in mine, and like to acknowledge the elders of the past and present of this nation and your nation and other nations that are represented here. It's really important to acknowledge those elders in talking about topics like this. So we fully believe, where I am at the Learning Center, that he who walks in another tracks leaves no footprints, and we like to leave footprints. So the work that we've been doing here is quite unique. I think that you'll find that some of the affordances that we've been given by the government and some of the funding that has been available to us is you know, we're very lucky, and we've been able to do something that's really very unique to anywhere else that I can find anywhere in the world, and maybe today you'll be able to change that a little bit for me. So what is our project, and what's the history of our project? We responded to a call out for proposals by the Ministry of Training, Colleges and Universities in the spring of 2003. And here in Canada, we have two different kinds of ministries for education. We have a Ministry of Education that deals with primary school, kind of kindergarten, and then right through to high school, graduating just before you go to college or TAFE, right, in university. And then we have another ministry called Training, Colleges and Universities, who takes care of the colleges or the TAFE, the universities, and training programs for mainly for adults. So apprenticeships, Work Ready programs, literacy programs, all fall under funding from that particular ministry. So we've got those two ministries. And I work for a little place called Sue Hudson Literacy Council. And we put in a proposal for a program called Good Learning Anywhere, GLA. And good question, Roger. The Ministry of Training Colleges and Universities and the Ministry of Education are provincial funding for each particular province. And our proposal was accepted in December 2003. We were one of four organizations that were approved for pilot projects to run from January 2004 to March 2005. And now our funding has continued through to March 2008. And we're still just waiting on our funding. But I don't know if it's like that for you, but we seem to wait for quite a few months for our funding. And they keep telling us it's coming. And we kind of, you know, work on a prayer and in debt, and then suddenly we get some funding. So I'm not sure if that is what it's like for you, but that's what it's like for us. So we're hoping for another year of funding here. We haven't yet become a program. We're still considered to be a project. So where are we exactly? Here's this great big map of Canada and my country. So where I'm located is a little place called Sioux Lookout, and where the red arrow is pointing, that's where I'm located. So you'll see that we have many different provinces. We're working from east to west, and we also have the Yukon Territory, the Northwest Territories, and now Nunavut. I actually worked in the Northwest Territories for 6 years up near Inuvik. You can see there's a little black dot there. Where I am now is actually considered Northern Ontario, even though it seems quite south on the map. So when we take that map and we expand it a little bit, then you can see now just the province of Ontario. I don't know if any of you have been to Canada or if you know how much you know about Canada, but there's Sioux Lookout. Sioux Lookout is actually the last place on the map, on this map anyway, where you can drive directly north. You can drive to Red Lake up on the left-hand side there, but you can't drive any further directly north from Sioux Lookout. All of the rest of the land that's from between Sioux Lookout and Fort Severn is just by ice roads only, okay? Or in the summer you can travel by plane and fly in some float planes as well. And if you see Fort Severn right up by Hudson's Bay, I lived there for a year and taught grade 3-4, and that's actually polar bear country there. You need to be quite careful in the winter. Oh, not seeing a map. Is there a reason, maybe, Debbie, why Cheryl can't see the map?
Is everybody else seeing the map? I think it should be okay. Can you just have a smiley face that everybody's seeing it? Yes, okay. It might just be Cheryl's connection. We'll, keep an eye on it.
Yeah, and I'm just reading here, too, that she's on dial-up, too. So, sorry, Cheryl. I can even send you these slides later if you like, Cheryl, so you can take a look through them. So that's where Sioux Lookout is. Now, my parents are in Ottawa. I'm going to just put a check mark down here close to Ottawa, where this is our nation's capital. Everybody see down there, I put a couple of check marks. So it's a 38-hour drive from Ottawa to Sioux Lookout. So that's kind of where I did my high school and my parents are. So it gives you an idea of how vast this province is, and how long it takes to drive kind of from one end to the other. I'm actually in a different time zone than the rest of the province as well. Right around Lake Nipigon there, the time zone changes, and so we're actually the same time as Manitoba. So let's take that map now. That's how most people, even in Canada, how most people know Sioux Lookout and know Ontario, know that region. But if we take that map and we once again magnify it, now there's Sioux Lookout with the red arrow, and look at actually all these communities that are there. And even a lot of Canadians, I'd say the majority of Canadians don't even know how many communities are actually here. There's approximately 37 communities. They're all First Nations communities. They're all the Fort Severn. In Fort Severn, everyone is a Cree nation, or Cree people. And then in the rest of those communities, it's an Ojibwe, until you get down to kind of Flying Post and Missinabe Cree. We turn into, again, Cree are here, and some straight Ojibwe. So there's kind of Ojibwe, Cree, and Ojikri. The communities range in size from about 9 people, I think there's one little community that has 9 or 10 people, to about 2,000. Kitchumanubakasub is Big Trout Lake, and it's one of the larger communities. All of these communities, again, are fly-in only, unless you are going to take the winter road, so you need to wait for the winter. And then you can drive over the ice, and you can get to the communities that way. So I've been to about 18 of these communities. They're all very different. They all have a really different feel. Although many of them can understand the languages from each of the other communities, each community has their own dialect, has their own twist on the language. So it makes it difficult, for instance, if you're going to take books for children and translate them into the native language, into syllabics, they call this, which is a lot of signs and symbols, and I'll show you in a little bit some ideas of that. If you're going to take the books that you translate, say, for Wawakapuan, and take it over to North Spirit Lake, they'd actually print their language a little bit different. So it's not like you can take a whole bunch of kids' books and translate them and then send them to the 37 communities. It just doesn't work like that. Okay, so approximately 35,000 people in total that live in this area. And the really amazing thing about this whole area is that a lot of these places don't have indoor plumbing. They don't have running water in their homes, but they all have high-speed broadband internet. A lot of people find that quite funny, that, you know, we don't have a flush toilet, but my gosh, we have high-speed internet. And this is a program, that was funded by this time the federal government, Roger, to bring the internet into these communities so they could do something called telehealth, which is a way for these community members to reach doctors and specialists to have appointments without having to leave their communities. So a lot of the elders, a lot of the very sick who just couldn't do travel very well now have a chance to meet with doctors on a television through broadband and have appointments with these specialists. So those are the kinds of communities that I'm talking about when I'm telling you a little bit about what I do here. Hi, Annette, thanks for coming. And we're just into the slides here. So if you could just let us know where you're from, maybe Annette, just typing up and let us know what you do. So here are some statistics of our Aboriginal people. 31% of Aboriginal people living on reserve in Ontario, in my province, have less than a grade 9 or no formal education at all, compared to that of 10% of the non-Aboriginal. So approximately triple the rate of Aboriginal people who live in Canada are suffering from not having the basic literacy levels. Aboriginal high school graduation rates reports 33% successful high school graduation rate compared to the mainstream population rate of 66%. So it gives you a little bit of idea of statistics. And in looking at statistics of your Indigenous people, again, quite similar statistics that we're finding between our countries. I always want to click the next button to get the slides. So what our program has been able to do is improve the reading, writing, and mathematics levels. The blue column here, this is just some statistics for people who are interested in numbers. The blue is when they came into the program, and the red is when they were leaving the program approximately 9 months later. So our LBS program, Literacy and Basic Skills, deals with levels 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Level 5 is ready for TAFE. Level 1 is pretty much illiterate. So you can see some people moving from 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 over the time period. There's the same for our writing program. Just give you a second to look there. And our math program. So we've been able to reach quite a few people. And I've been doing a little bit of research around my master's degree, which I completed in 2004, and try to find, you know, what does that distance learner, who is that distance learner? And Grill was someone who really caught my attention because he talked about traditional distance learners being well-motivated, well-educated, middle-class Caucasian individuals who want to continue their education. And I knew that our learners were quite a bit different than that. We didn't have a whole lot of well-educated, middle-class Caucasian folks. And when we took a look at our typical learners, we had low-level literacy learners. We had people who were unemployed or underemployed. They had no access to adult upgrading programs without leaving their community. They had low or no computer skills. And we needed to be very flexible with their schedule because they have parenting issues, they have work issues, the communities are very tight-knit. If there's a funeral, for example, and someone dies, the whole community shuts down for the week, and so you know you're not going to get any learners that week. And we needed to be open and flexible to those kinds of things. And I'm not sure if this is sounding similar to the kinds of things that you work with, those are the kinds of things that we work with. Great, Sally, glad you're back. Got that baby settled. So I really wanted to redefine the distance learner. So we wanted to focus on characteristics that included any learner who want to further their education, their training, their employment, their personal independence, despite where they live, despite what their previous education is, their economic situation, or any limited access to organized literacy programming. So we've encouraged to be creative about how we reach our learners and where we reach our learners and how we facilitate our classes. So some of our programming is sent through the mail, which can be very slow. And I'm sure if you're dealing with your Outback or some of the communities, you find the same. Some telephone, where we're chatting with people on the phone and helping them with lessons. I live very close to the float planes, and if we waited another hour or so, you'd actually be able to hear them in our back yard here is where the float planes take off. And so we use those float planes. If I have something to get to a student, I can go down and say, you know, hey, Jim, can you take this up for me? And he's quite wonderful about that. The fax machine has proven to be quite important in our work, as well as using the video and DVDs that we send. And we use a program called Centra, which is an online interactive program that I'm going to talk about a little bit here that's not too different from this Literacy Live conference room. And then we have a Learning Center website that we've created for easy access to courses for our students. I'm trying to read and talk at the same time, and that's hard for me. Great, Cheryl. I'm so interested in what you all do. I can't even tell you. I feel like just sitting back and listening to what you all do. So some of the features of that Centra program, that it's live time, it's interactive, there's immediate feedback, it's very visual. There's a recording feature, just like this program, and there's a playback feature. So if somebody couldn't come to class or something happened in the community where they missed that class, all of the sessions are recorded and people can go back and listen to them at any time and get caught up. And the teacher can tell when they've cut one in, how long they stayed for, if they listened to the whole recording, if they answered the questions for that lesson. And so that playback feature has come very handy for us. So what have we designed then to use on this program? Well, we've done a couple of different courses. One of them is called First Nations Management Training. So it was decided by the folks that are running the communities, the chiefs and the council, that there needs to be some kind of program that is put into place to help to train people who are working in band offices, health centers, education offices in the communities. Just simple things like answering the phone, some accounting, some basic accounting, that kind of thing. So they came up with this course called First Nations Management Training. And what they decided to do was that many of the students had to take some college courses, some TAFE courses. And of course, when they tried to take the TAFE courses, they weren't able to keep up because we saw these statistics on the high school levels and finishing high school levels. So we offered some programs just free of charge for people who were going to take these courses to help them to upgrade to prepare to succeed in the First Nations management training. So one of them was a communications course, for example. So we took one of the textbooks that was on a suggested list for that course as additional resources, and we created something online that went through that book and helped people get through that book and answer any questions that they might have. So once they got to the communications course, they could be successful. One of the things that we find here is if people want to take courses, the college is like a business, and I'm not sure if the TAFE is a lot the same there, but people are charged to take courses. If people don't have the skills or don't have the money, first of all, the TAFE can get money for that person through the form of a bursary. But the problem is that when they get the funding to do the course, if they fail the course, then they can't get funding again. So not only does, you know, are they kind of set up for failure, I feel, in some way, but they also don't have a chance to redeem themselves because now they have no way of getting funding again. So we're really trying to find a stepping stone in between the level that they're coming in at and TAFE to try to prepare them to be successful with TAFE. We also have done a high school support program, which I'll talk about in a sec. And we've done an empowerment through learning program, which is like a GED program, which is a graduate of education diploma, and hopefully you have a similar kind of thing. And in partnership with Confederation College, one of the local TAFEs here, I created a program called Teacher Assistant Career Training. And this is for people who live and work in local First Nations communities in elementary schools with students with disabilities or with exceptionalities. And a lot of these folks had been put into these jobs kind of moms off the street to work with kids with disabilities, but they never received any training in how to do that. So it was really important to me to help to put kind of a workplace literacy course together that helps these teacher assistants do their job better, basically. So here are some of the students. This is Mindy from Sachigo Lake, from one of those small communities. She took the TACT program, the Teacher Assistant Career Training Program, and decided that she actually wanted to be a teacher. Asked me for some help with some entry exams for Teachers College, and went to do a Aboriginal Teachers Education Program. Again, Aboriginal Teachers Education Program doesn't have the same kind of entry requirements. You need a grade 11 or 12 or something like that, but you don't need an undergraduate degree, and it's kind of a two-year program that's done at a local university here, about 5 hours from Sioux Lookout. So she packed up with her sister and her five children and went off and is now in the teacher education class, which is kind of an exciting, she's one of our success stories. Here's Shannon, Areta Mikas from Deer Lake. And you can see our students are very similar to students anywhere else. You can see the snacks. Not sure if you can see that. Not one, but two different kinds of snacks in front of the computer, and talking on the phone while she's supposed to be paying attention to me. So I like to use this picture to say, see, these students are similar to the students that we see face-to-face. And here's what the program looks like. So this is a fractions class in mathematics. You can see on the left-hand side that the people are listed, much like we are listed in this program, and the teacher's up at the top. The slides are down here at the bottom, so the students can see where you're at. And then just the teacher has some of the questions ready on the slides, and different students are doing different questions and working out their math programs. Sorry, their math problems, and I just need to cough for a second here. And working on their math program. And we can actually choose different colors, just like we chose here, and they can work through. This is using a mouse, writing these numbers with just a mouse, but you can also use an interactive web tablet for math, which is really a great tool to have for a course like this. And so here's a science class, same kind of thing. Practice question is up. Different students have different colors here. One is red, one is purple, one is black, and they're writing in their answers to the questions, and they're working on a question together. Here there's also a guest speaker named Ross, who came from a local TAFE to talk a little bit about density and kind of the basics of protons and neutrons and that kind of thing for the students. And I think I need to go to the next slides. Let's just see if I'm smart enough to do that. And some of them might go back a little bit, is that right? Debbie? There. Sorry, bear with me. Cheryl, you must be going crazy there with your dial-up. You can also bring URLs into the program. Whoops. What have I done here? There we go. So there's the URLs. So this is a history class, and they're talking about the greatest events in Canadian history. And the teacher has opened up the Canadian Encyclopedia Historica on the web, and all the rest of the students can then see that. They can not only can see it, but if I would click on their microphone, I'd give them the power to work in that website. So for instance, one of the interesting things that we do in the science class is a frog dissection. And there's a really great website you can go to called frogguts. www.sulukpodcast.com. You can open up that website, and you can actually dissect a frog on the web. And your students can then have a turn to try to cut open the frog, and everybody can have a go at it before they go off and do that project by themselves. So that's another really great tool that you have within this system. Again, in social science, putting up a timeline and having people fill in that timeline is another way of having the students interact. They can also draw pictures and have a really great time. This program actually allows you to interact by clapping and by laughing. Over here you can see people are laughing and having a great time. Yeah, it's Frog Guts, actually, Debbie. FROGGUTS.com. And here they're talking about their favorite seasons and drawing some pictures up of their favorite seasons. There you go, Deb. Thanks. And here's a reading and writing class where everyone had to write a poem and then send the poem to the teacher. The teacher put the poem on the PowerPoint slides and then uploaded the PowerPoint slides. And you can see the teachers reacting with clapping, and the rest of the students are laughing and having a great time. And I find using this program, and it's much like using this Literacy Live conference room, that it takes the anonymity piece and puts it in place so you don't need to be seen, right? If you don't want to be seen, you don't have to be. You can. There is a video camera if you want to activate it. But it allows people to kind of talk freely and be involved in a class without being seen. And for our First Nations people, the shyness factor kicks in, and it's a big piece. So that kind of takes that away, and we see a lot of interaction with the students. So we've also done this high school literacy support. I thought I had a picture earlier. I know I did. I'm not sure what happened to it, of me and my coworkers and kind of some of the landscape. But this gives you an idea. This is Sulukout this time of year. Lots of trees and lots of water. Lots of fishing, good fishing here. In the winter, it's bitter cold. You get down to minus 50 degrees Celsius. Schools don't close till minus 57, so we're a strong group of people here, but there is lots of fishing in the summer. Our winters kind of start at the end of October. Halloween, the kids are trick-or-treating on Skidoo a lot of the time in snowsuits, and we had snow on May 22nd this year, so it was the longest winter ever, and that's why Roger lives in Alice Springs, and that's why we're looking forward to a year in Australia, I have to say, because it is a cold, long winter. The number of students in Ontario every student needs to pass a grade 10 literacy test in order to graduate from high school. They have two chances to pass that grade 10 literacy test. And at the Pelican Falls First Nations High School, where a lot of the students come from up north and come to the school, they have to complete this test and they can't seem to get through it. And so they have special permission to have a literacy class, and if they can get through the literacy class, then they can still graduate from high school. So we helped with that literacy class by providing an online synchronous class for the students there with an instructor. Split the class in half. Half of the class stays with the teacher and does a novel study and face-to-face support work. And half of the class comes online to do our literacy support in preparation for that, for their tests and for their work in the literacy class. And then they switch. So 2005, 2006, there was 15 students in the class, and they all passed that class. 2006, 2007, there were 25. I think we had 18 this year. I just need to get those final numbers from this year, and they all do quite well with that support. So the local high school here, the public high school, heard about that. They only had 57% passing their literacy test, and so they asked if we could help them do the same thing. So we're doing the same thing with the local high school, and again, we've seen a 7% increase in the Ontario Secondary School Literacy Test. Again, we offer these programs for free. We are based, if it's interesting to you or not, I'm not sure, but we're based on $120,000 a year funding, and we're expected to have 120 learners a year. So our numbers are very important. Getting our numbers up are very important. Getting as many people through our programs as possible are important. And so that's the kind of funding that we're allowed, and that's what we work with every year. And again, here's some typical classes where students are trying questions and working through pieces for their literacy class. One of the great features of CENTRA, which is the program that we use, and again, the program that's funded, the government has purchased 200 seats of this program for us to use. It's managed by a company called Contact North, and so we can use that. Literacy agencies can use that whenever they want, for as long as they want, within reason. We need to make sure that, you know, the 200 seats are used, that we're dispersing them amongst our groups evenly. The breakout rooms allow you to take your class and put them into breakout rooms, so groups of people can work together. And you as the instructor can go from room to room to room to check on them. They're all in individual rooms working with smaller groups. They can pull up a whiteboard, write their answers on the whiteboard, have a group discussion, then save their work. You can talk to everybody and say, okay, everybody, 5 minutes left. They finish up their work, and then they save their work, and then you bring everybody back to the main room with another click of a button. And then you're able to pull up each group's slides and take a look at what each group has been doing. And Illuminate is quite similar to CENTRA, Cheryl, and it does have some of these features as well. I just find CENTRA is a really, really nice for literacy learners because it's a very easy program to use. It's a very user-friendly program. And so that's a really great feature about the breakout rooms. And it's amazing, really. It's just like sending all the kids out into the hallway, and you're in this group, and you're in that group, and here are your markers. Here's your text, here's your paper, and they're working as a group, and you can go around from group to group and check on them. It's similar, except it's all virtual, which is quite an amazing thing. So here's an example of the syllabics that I told you about. Linda, the instructor in this case, walked away from her group for a moment, and she said, okay, Lois, you're in charge. I need to go. I think it was calm the baby, actually, Sally. And when she came back, the lady in Kingfisher Lake was teaching the other, or showing the other people in the class how they spell how are you in their language in her community. And they were comparing the different ways that they spell how are you in their communities in their language. So po sho, she's showing here the sound for po and the symbol for sho. And they're all taking turns writing the syllabics in their communities. So really great example of how we can incorporate native language into using this program as well, and incorporate the syllabics of using languages into using this program. So when I was at a conference, the people who own CENTRA are now called SABA. In 2006, I was speaking in Boston, and I met Roger Edmonds, who was the director at the time of the School of the Air in Adelaide. I'm not sure if anyone has heard of him before. Very nice man. Where you started using radio technology to teach school to children who live in remote and isolated areas of Australia. Now you're seeing your students look like this. And using that same program that we use with our adults, except you're using it with kids, kind of kindergarten through grade 8 through School of the Air. Great program, School of the Air, really successful. And when I took a look at some of the pictures that he was showing, this one, and maybe this looks familiar to some of you, this is what Ontario looks like in the north, except you have to add some taller trees and some snow. But pretty much when you go down Airport Road, and we stand at the edge of Airport Road and look north, this is what it looks like for me too. So I had to have a bit of a laugh about that because I thought, well, goodness, we have so many things in common. And just some really great, and Cheryl's just saying that she actually was involved in School of the Air, which is great. Some really great programs that they were able to do. You know, teaching music using this program, that's what the student sees. And then this is what the teacher sees and is able to point out pieces and just chat with the students and get them working. Also taking a look at different programs that they've been able to do with students. They have a program where they took the kids virtually on a field trip to see dolphins. So there's the computer, there's Roger Edmonds on the left, and they're doing field trips with dolphins in Australia, where the kids then can listen, and this picture didn't show up for some reason, but be able to listen to the dolphins, to ask the scientist questions and that sort of thing. And I thought, well, he showed a picture that looked like this, you know, teachers dressing up as aliens before a science lesson. And I thought, well, you know, we know some people like that, or I know some people who'd put pantyhose on their heads. So we decided to try to do this with kids as well. And we did a program called Causey, which, you know, is bathing suit, and I thought that was good because it's the first dip into trying this. And we also had a program called Building Opportunities to Literacy Development, or BOLD. So what we did was connect a group of kids from School of the Air to a group of kids in Kingfisher Lake in one of the Aboriginal communities north of us, and they did a lesson for each other. The kids up north decided to do something about snow and teach all the kids from School of the Air about snow. And it was just such a great literacy experience because they had to, we had to talk to the schools, get the two schools set up, decide what we were going to do. And then the kids decided that they were going to take a webcam outside and they were going to show the kids in Australia about snow. And the kids in Kingfisher Lake were so excited to share their world. They actually got a little bit too excited. But the parents were inside. It was parent-teacher interview, and you could just hear a pin drop in there. There was about 60 people crammed into the classroom, and they did a whole lesson about snowflakes and how snowflakes were made and what the children like to do in the snow. And they showed pictures. Oh, some of my pictures aren't coming through. They showed pictures of their snow sculptures that they did. They took cardboard boxes and slid down the ice hills. They showed the kids broom ball and what broom ball was all about. And some of the questions that came from the kids in Australia, sorry, I don't know why these pictures aren't happening for me. They're not very happy. So those were just some of the pictures that I was going to show you. That's okay. Some of the questions that came from the kids from Australia were, you know, if the snow lands on your tongue, does it taste like something? Or if it lands on your jacket, is it dry or is it wet? You know, these kinds of things that we don't think about. One little girl said, I don't understand about the ball. When you're making a snowman, how do you start the ball? And so these were really great questions that came from the kids. So a week later, we met online again, and then the students in Australia presented some mini lessons to the kids in Kingfisher Lake on various aspects of Australia and where they live and the animals that they see. And one girl was nursing a wombat, and so they had a picture of that. And the kids, again, in Kingfisher Lake had so many questions. You know, do you have big stores near you? Do you go hunting and fishing? What do you do with the sheep? What do you do all day? You know, some really simple things like, do you have brothers and sisters? Some environmental things like, do you have running water? Is it drinkable? Do you know Robert Lang? Can you do a front flip on a trampoline? So these kids were kind of grade 3 and 4. Can you do a handstand? And the kids in Australia were really great. I had a pre-session with them, and one of the boys said, you know, are these like real Indians, like cowboys and Indians? You know, he wanted to know about the kinds of people that he was going to be talking to, which is great. And for weeks after the students talked about their online adventure, the teacher was able to connect classroom literacy activities to these sessions, and the students were so motivated. Some of the literacy activities that happened were researching snow together, group work for just questions they had, researching the questions that they could answer, journals about Australia, vocabulary during sessions, and then just using the technology. So all the things directly related to the curriculum and what the teachers were trying to achieve with these students. So what are some of the other exciting projects that we're trying to do? We're primarily to work with adults, although I am a trained elementary school teacher. I have to keep in mind that my program is about working with adults. We got some extra funding to try a distance essential skill training initiative, which was to help and deliver essential skills work module series that are deliverable to literacy organizations anywhere. And with the workplace essential skills, we decided first to start with a course called Heavy Equipment Operator. So again, this course is a literacy course for people who might like to operate heavy equipment in their communities. They aren't able to cope with the literacy level of the TAFE course around equipment operator, and so it's a bridging program to help get them ready. So this is the first group. A lot of men, which was great because in a lot of our programs up to this point, it was mainly females who were involved. And so these were some of the future heavy equipment operators, all of which now have gotten into the TAFE program, into the heavy equipment operator program. So again, a successful story. And some feedback from the learners. Oh, there's our first float plane taking off. 93% felt the course helped them to do better. 80% were employed within 6 months after completing their course. 80% felt the course helped them do better at their job. And some of the comments, more courses like this should be available. It's important to me that I can continue to learn without leaving my community. Being isolated from colleges, this course made it a lot easier than flying out. It was just easier. So those are some of our positive comments. So what do we have on the horizon? Well, this is Musselwhite Mine. It's a gold mine that's about 190 kilometers northwest of us. And it sits on First Nations land. And so there's agreement between the mine and the First Nations community that they will hire so many First Nations people to work at the mine. The sad thing is that they need a grade 10 to work underground and a grade 12 to work above ground. And they come to the mine and they're not prepared. They don't have the skills. They might have a piece of paper that says, yes, I have my grade 12, but they don't have the skills retain employment. So they've worked with the TAFE, and again, the levels have been too high for those learners, so they've come to the literacy and they've said, okay, how can you help us? So we've just received a grant from federal funding to run a two-year program to try to help give the First Nations or the Aboriginal people in the area the skills that they need to be able to obtain and retain employment at Musselwhite Mine. We also have an exciting new hospital that's being built. This is actually where the other picture I just showed you is a real picture. This is a forecast picture. This is a building that's being built right now. It's a new hospital in Sioux Lookout, and it's going to be the largest teaching hospital in northwestern Ontario. And again, there's going to be lots of jobs here, construction, you know, and they're going to bigger city centers and bringing people up because folks here are just not qualified enough to be able to take these courses. So right now we're working with the Sioux Lookout Area Aboriginal Management Board and the TAFE to try to promote electrician courses, general contractors, that kind of thing, and help these folks get the skills that they need to be able to get some of these jobs so that the jobs aren't given out to people outside of the community. So our successes, we've got 17 remote First Nations communities. We've developed about 8 course content. We've delivered over 250 classes and over 450 registered learners. We've received a lot of positive feedback and built relationships with some of the communities, and then also made educational partners with some of the other local organizations. And I guess most of all, learners are reaching their personal and literacy and employability goals, which is really important to me. And so we'd like to continue building on our framework and make new partnerships like we have here tonight, encourage other communities to become involved through continuous advertising, promotion, get more feedback from our learners, and we'd really like to have core government funding from our program, but wouldn't we all, I guess, doesn't matter where we live in the world, and share our strengths and create a learning community of distance literacy practitioners. I think one of the things that we don't have a lot of is, you know, a group of folks that are all trying to do the same kind of thing, work with First Nations, Aboriginal, Indigenous people at a distance and try to help them with their literacy and employability goals, and have a sharing circle, have a place where we can come and share our successes and our strengths and our ideas and things that work and things that might not work so well. And then research with Indigenous communities for Indigenous communities. So not just walking into the community and here I am and this is what we're going to do now, which has also always been a challenge for me. I'm, you know, a 6 foot tall blonde woman. I have no Aboriginal descent, though I have a story about that sometime if we ever get together in the future. That's a difficult thing when you're coming in. So before people leave, just hang on 1 second, Anne. For a recap and follow up of this session, please look for me at the ACAL conference in Surfers Paradise in October. I will be there. I've recently received a scholarship from the University of Wollongong to do my PhD in this area, and I'm looking at effectively using synchronous technologies to support Indigenous communities, and I'm basing some of my research on Lynette Henderson's multiple cultural theory. I'm using a design-based research, which involves practitioners' viewpoints combined with a literature review to confirm research questions. So therefore, I'm looking for a few volunteers who might have worked or are currently working with Indigenous literacy learners who might like to participate in a focus group to contribute to my research. My email address at the bottom of the page there, Anne, if you just wanted to take it down before you leave. I thought I probably should have done this in the beginning and then I wouldn't lose anybody at the end. But I just want to have an hour focus group with people who have worked with Indigenous people and combine some of the thoughts that you have about what your experiences are with the minimal literature that's out there. There's not a lot of literature that's out there. The purpose of the research is to come up with some basic principles when we're working with First Nations people and Indigenous people to incorporate when we're looking at literacy and employability skills for Indigenous communities. So, and if you know someone or if you're interested, that would be really wonderful to get some of your perspectives. And what I would ask is that you send me a quick email. Thanks, Anne. And let me know that you'd be interested in participating. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about the research and what the research entails when I'm at the ACL conference in October, and then hope to follow this up again in Melbourne when I'm on my way down to South Australia where my research is taking place. So I'm working with Outback Connect, which is a group in South Australia who works with Indigenous communities and is helping to bring technologies into those communities, and working with one community in particular to find out what their needs are and what they think that they really need, and then try to help to build that, to use that use that synchronous technology to help them reach their goals and their skills needed. So that's a little bit about what we do in Canada, and I would love to take any questions if anybody has any questions. This is my number at the uni. I'm actually moving my whole family to Australia for a year, my 5-year-old son and my husband. We leave next week, Thursday. So, you know, kind of the first week of September, I'll be at that number. Unfortunately, there's no machine attached to any of the student telephones, so you won't be able to leave a message. So maybe the best way is to get me through my email. And I'm just going to put up, maybe what I'll do is just a thank you slide for your time, your interest, and your support. I'll come back to this. And again, here's my information as well as the information of the coordinator of this program and our website if you're interested in taking a look at our website. So I think that I've kind of gone over by about 4 minutes, but if there's any questions or comments, I'd really appreciate really appreciate your questions. So Debbie, I see one here from Roger. So Outback Connect are not attached to a TAFE that I know of. They're part of the South Australian government project. A digital bridge unit is what the program is called. And with my project, we might be working with a TAFE. We're taking a look at Point Pierce right now. It's looking like one of the communities that are really interested. But you know what I found, Cheryl, is that there's no academic research that has been done around this area. There's been projects and there's been reports, but when you're doing a literature review both in Canada and in Australia and you're taking a look at working with Indigenous literacy learners at a distance, there's really nothing out there. So I'm hoping that my little piece of research will help when technology does come into the communities. Okay, now what do we do? Oh, let's take a look at this piece of research and what did they find, is what I'm hoping. Roger, how well would this work with adult students who have little or no computer skills? So what we've been able to do then is create a website, and you can take a look at it at SueHudsonLiteracy.com. And we have a practitioner or a mentor at the literacy center or at the little mobile home with the computers in it. And then with that local support, then you're able to have the folks click on the desktop onto the icon for the website, or have it open as soon as the internet opens. And then all we've done is taken the courses so that they're direct linked. So the students just click on the direct link, put in their username and password, and it takes them into class. Or they can click on the past link of the date that they've missed, put in their username and password, and it takes them to the recording so they can listen to the recording. So we've tried to make it one-stop shop as easy as possible for the learners to use. And we found there to be quite a bit of success. So and that's It's funny, in Central we have applause, so if I had applause, I would be clapping for all of you for sticking with me for the hour. But if you have any other questions or comments or suggestions, that would be great. And I'm looking, like I said, I'm looking for a focus group of about six people, so this would be a perfect little group if you're interested to send me a quick email so I have your contact information. That would be wonderful. Deb, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you very much. Any comments from anyone before we sign off? Oh, I think that was amazing. I'm very impressed. And being a Canadian by birth, spent a little bit of time in Toronto a couple of years ago, but would love to get out of town and see some of the land that I was born in. So thank you very much, Michelle, for getting up early. Thank you for everybody's attendance. Any final comments or questions? Okay, well maybe we'll just have a round of applause or a smiley face for Michelle. And hopefully any of you that are going to the ACAL conference in September, October, will get to meet her there. So thank you very much for your attendance tonight.
Thanks very much, everyone. Have a wonderful evening and a good sleep. I'm going to try to crawl back into bed, too. And it'll be really wonderful to hear from all of you and get your contact information. And I really do look forward to catching up with you in Alice Springs, actually, Roger. And everyone else, hope to see you at ACAL. So take care and have a wonderful evening.